focus in here, and now we're going to talk lead, and I'm walking you through so that, and as I do this, maybe you can make notes in a two-column way, which is, here are the general notes that I'm talking about. Here's your first chakra, and here are the general notes about power there, and here are how they relate to you personally. So that as I do this, you're going to go back and forth and incarnate the data right away. First chakra, then. This is the part of your body that houses information related to tribal and group data. I've said this before, and I've taught it for a long time, but not within the framework of the alchemist. And in ritual, we are by design ritual creatures. We have to have rituals for survival. Here in this chakra are the records of your ritual history. And literally it records, and let me give you an example of that. When we're born, when a soul incarnates, the tribe has an archetypal obligation to have a ceremony that makes official the release of a spirit into physical matter. The tribe needs to absorb that spirit into physical form through an act of the sacred that represents the acceptance of responsibility for this life in the physical world. Okay? Similarly, let me tie it to something that, in the same way, what I'm talking to you about is the birth process period. The birth process of, you can draw a blank and you can fill that blank in with a gazillion things. So, to do that, you are giving birth to an idea, to a change in your life, to whatever it is, to your healing process. That same dynamic is going to follow you through every one of the chakras because this is an archetypal pattern of creation. And when, say, the first day you open the door of your job, or the first day you decide to take on your healing process, or the first day you go to Weight Watchers, I don't care what it is. But when you get there, when that day begins on the ground, you are best served by having some kind of ritual that signifies the merger of the sacred with what you've created, that puts a conscious soul into what you're doing. The tribe does it automatically. The tribe says, let's have a party, let's crack open champagne, we build ships, we blast champagne bottles on it, and we do all of these social rituals, but at an archetypal level, what we're really doing is merging the energy of the psyche through that, for example, an act as what you might think as simple or as social, as taking a bottle of champagne and breaking it on the nose of a ship. What's really going on symbolically, and this is when you learn to read alchemy, is you can look at that act and say it's socially interesting, but if you could speak energy, you would look and realize that what's occurring is that's the element of agua, of water, and that it was being, water's emotion, water carries the ocean, water carries the force of Neptune, and that it's being cracked open on the bow of the ship, but in the water is contained the emotional psyche of the people of the nation. And that it's put into the ship, put into matter, and that's what that ritual is all about. Nobody in Washington or in the military is sitting around saying we need to archetypally put our psyche into that vessel. Now, but if you really understood, but nevertheless, that gods communicated the need for that ritual. And without that ritual, there have been stories. I read all this because my hobby is military history. That when you read all of this, there are incidences in which ships somehow or other got to sea without being christened. From a symbolic point of view, you have to recognize your life is a ship. and you take on passengers and you have journeys and ports. This is a metaphor that works for people. But when they haven't been christened, superstitions come from that. The crew doesn't feel safe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there is an element of fear that happens when this ritual does not take place. What does that have to do with you? I'll tell you. The people that I have met in my life who have the most, say it differently, the majority of the people I've met in my work who would have what I would call a variation of crisis from being ungrounded. What kind of crisis is that? This is not just when you say ungrounded that they're airy-fairy or they're, you know, they can't focus. Also under the word ungrounded comes, I can't ground my ideas. I can't ground the next stage of my life. I have ideas, but I can't bring them into the ground. Do you relate to it this way? And, or here's another way. I have a relationship. I want to get it grounded and it just won't happen. I have a healing that I need. I want this energetic pattern of my body to get grounded and it just won't happen. Grounding means everything comes under the umbrella of needing to be grounded. But with people in that whole sense of I don't know where I belong and they're wanderers in life and this kind of thing, do you know that the majority of them were never welcomed into their tribe with some form of sacrament like baptism? They were not well, and I started to look at this just from the point of view of curiosity because, I'm curious and everything like that. And, you know, after you do enough readings, that's when you start to chart your patterns, right? As is true with anything. And so, you meet people with certain energetic profiles. One of the profiles was of the ungrounded, the wanderer archetype, okay? The person who can't seem to stay put or can't seem to stay with a job or can't seem to stick with a relationship. What they live in is the Kairos world. If you want to look at it from an alchemical point of view or if you yourself are in this archetype, you have more timelessness in you than you do linear time. You have an abundance of what you want to think of perhaps as vertical or non-time, too much of that versus too little linear time. When I say linear time, I am talking about day to day to day, hour to hour to hour. We share this wristwatch. There is a place in life at which we are subject to the rulership of this level of time, and that's the wristwatch level. As we begin the ascent into the psyche, time and space becomes something we begin to manage more and more and more by ourselves, even up to the second chakra. This first chakra is distance, time, and space, and we share that. But as soon as you get up to the second chakra, you're on your own. Relativity begins. We still share some time and space, but relativity starts like this. This is the chakra of creation, and for all women, 9 months is the cycle of birth. 9 months. That a baby might come out earlier or whatever is just one of those things of nature, but in general, it is a 9-month time zone. However, let's apply time and relativity to a question that was brought up earlier, and that's the capacity to manifest money. Here, a person some people can manifest in one day what it might take another 1 month to. Manifestation of this energy that becomes money starts entering relativity in the second chakra. And then it gets more and more relative to the point where there is no time and matter at all. It's one and the same dimension for you. So when you look at yourself and you think, do you understand that you need these rituals? Pay attention to yourself from the point of view of the alchemist, because this is your physical world. And I started to ask you yesterday about, do you have rituals when you get up in the morning? Do you bathe a certain way? Do you do this? From now on, you start recognizing, pay attention. You are so unconscious of it till yesterday and today that when you get up, from the way you comb your hair to the way you get dressed to the time you have your coffee to all of this, from this point of view, it looks meaningless and da-da-da, but do you understand it is all an alchemical way in which you are maneuvering and lining up your energetic pattern for the day? So there it's meaningless. Here it's every single meaningful thing you can hear. So if you got, from now on, let us say just for an experiment, that tomorrow morning when you get up, you're not walking into the shower, you're walking into one of the four elements of life. And that you turn on the water and it's not just water, it is that force that should shed your emotional body. So that you not only just freshen up your physical body, it's an emotional shedding. And as you do that, you are thinking to yourself and you walk right through this system. Where are my emotions today? I got to kind of figure out what's positive, where I'm losing, where I'm not. You have to always ask the positive and the shadow question hand in hand. If you were talking about duality, it's positive and shadow. We don't emphasize the positive like we do the shadow. We get up and we say, where am I losing power? Where am I negative? Where do I need to heal? Enough of that. You ask one lead question to one light question. One lead, one gold. One lead, one gold. It's a teamwork now. So you say, where am I leaded? Where am I learning? Where's the lead? Where's the gold? Two, all the time. Then you bring it down to, what choices can I make to use the gold, melt the lead? Use the gold, melt the lead. And then you begin to script how you want to balance yourself a little bit more that day. How you want to balance or melt down your lead. You chart a course. In the process of the charting, you want to look at your physical world and realize, I got to go in there as soon as I get out of the house. So find and pick the stress points. And then when you get in, keep that attitude in mind that day is another day for you to go through the meltdown process of lead to gold, lead to gold. So first chakra is where all of your energetic patterns are attached to all tribal processes that control your spirit in terms of how you use your energy in your life. Let me give you an example. How many of you are still influenced by tribal superstitions? By superstitions. How many of you have any superstitions that in any way, shape, or form control you, influence you, have anything? How many of you know superstitions whatsoever? None. How many of you have a right and a left arm? Is it a superstition not to raise them in a classroom? Okay. For how many of you are conscious of a superstition that actually influences you in some way every day of your life? Yeah? Which one? Yeah. The fear that if you talk about something, it'll happen. Why do you think nobody raises their hands? They're absolutely paralyzed that if you admit something, it's going to sit next to you.
No, Carolyn, it's the fear that if you talk about something that you want to happen, it won't happen.
It's the same thing. So it's just the reverse, that if I talk about it, it won't happen. Do you know there's some truth to that? I'm sorry to say. That's just what you need to hear, isn't it? You're going to watch this monk take a vow of silence before he's out of the room. You ooze the monk archetype. I don't know if that's good news or not, but you ooze the monk. I'll tell you why there's truth. Okay, start paying attention like an alchemist. At the physical level, it's a superstition, but all superstitions are rooted in an alchemical truth. It's just that they incarnated through a shadow. And they incarnated in such a way because if you don't know what you're dealing with, it's going to bite you until you know what you're dealing with. It's just logic. So here's Let's go up here. Let's say that the gods give you a jewel of inspiration. Here's where the jewel goes. And what they want to do, inspiration is a unit that goes into the psyche that requires you begin to direct your circuits of light into it so that you can create it into matter. That's called inspiration. Okay? If you begin, here's your a big mouth. If you begin to chatter about it, that energy will go out here and it'll never come down. It's as simple as that. It truly is as simple as that. It's an alchemical principle. You've missed distributed it. And it will not manifest. It's really truly as simple as that. So it is rooted, but you can understand it either by wisdom or by woe. It can either scare you or it can guide you, but it is a truth. All right? You following me? What other superstition do you have? Anybody? Yes. You had one? Yes. That's not a superstition. A superstition is not talking to the divine every day aligns your day. That's a spiritual belief. A superstition is something that scares you, that takes your power, and has the ability to control your psyche, even though you think that you're smarter than that. All right, now do you understand a superstition? It has the ability to control you, to scare you, to determine a choice, and to take away an element of your free will. This is why, you know, when I emphasize this, you don't understand. What I'm trying to tell you is, in identifying these things called superstitions, you put superstitions in one of these houses. You put tribal beliefs here. You put your ethnic heritage in another one. You put your religion in another one. You put social attitudes about the self, about jobs and social status. I could go around all 12, and each one of these is an aspect of the tribal mind that you have and it has control over you and you with it. Every one of these. And in every case, you'll have at least one superstition that was taught to you as a way of locking your mind and psyche into the behavior and the management and the maintenance of that belief for the rest of your life. Okay? Like, for example, if you enjoy your life too much, God will take away what's good about your life. Do any of you believe anywhere near that? Okay, now that's a belief that comes out of the tribal fear to protect itself. So here, one of these little cycles has to do with fears that the tribal members teach their youth so that the youth stays together. Because remember, the fundamental concept of the tribe is to maintain the tribe, the safety, to have more babies, to keep alive the tradition. The maintenance of the tribe is not to shove its babies out to become independent, to never see them again, though that might happen. The nature of the tribe is to hold people together, so we are taught from day one fears that have to hold us together so that we need to protect each other. Okay? Now, superstitions are that which a tribe gives you as a way of taking a chunk of your will so that the superstition makes the choice for you. To put it in alchemical terms, it's putting you under a spell. You're under a spell. Now, when I'm directing you through all of these, if this were the 12th century, the language I would use is to say to you, I want you to go look for all the spells you're under because you want to pull them out. Because without doing that, you don't have a functioning fifth chakra. You do not have a functioning will without that. So, do you have any questions real quickly? I'll take one question on the first chakra. Anybody?
I don't know if I'm going to say it properly, but feng shui.
Feng shui.
Feng shui. When you practice feng shui, how do you separate the practice of feng shui and the belief that if you put certain items in a certain place of the home away from also being superstitious, like if you don't put the toilet lid down, you know,
your wealth
going
goes
to
down, the money goes,
right.
Where did that one come from? Yeah. It's what do you think feng shui is based upon, if not the alchemy of balance?
Well, energy.
Right. Well, what am I talking about?
Right.
Feng shui is the balance, is the science, the art, the practice, the alchemy of how to arrange your room for maximum balance of energy or magnetics. Okay?
I know, but those are material things. So why do we put so much belief
no,
into...
Did you hear? Listen, that's the physical manifestation of life has a physical manifestation.
Right.
And so what we do is we give our spirits to these objects, and they become objects of power. Okay? And what you want to learn in your psyche is how much power do each of these objects have? It becomes a system through which you learn about yourself. You will get, am I making sense to you? You will give power to each object. You will have some third chakra objects, and you have some second chakra objects. You have a lot of first chakra. You can actually, if you knew what you were doing, walk through your house and say, this one belongs to my second chakra, this is my first, this is my third, this is my fourth. You could actually go through your house and name the objects that go in what chakra. The task of awareness is to be able to go up to an object. Let's say the room is set up in a feng shui. That is for spiritual balance. So let's say you walk in there and you're not balanced. The natural flow would be to get you balanced, which means that when you're in there, perhaps it's more natural an energy field that causes you to start thinking about where your lack of balance comes from. It's set up for that, not unlike you want a different word for it, a chapel. You want a different word for it? The Druid Circle. There is no difference in these places in terms of the fact that they are set up as energy fields specifically designed to bring the imbalances of the soul to the fore. And part of that is to be able to see where in physical matter, lead, you have released your soul and said that part of the lead rules my psyche. And therefore, I am not free to make any choices because that object makes the choice for me. Okay? How many objects do you have that make choices for you instead of you? Anybody? Where an object has more of a vote over your life than you do? Money? Telephones? Okay. Yeah. One, I tell you this. I deal a lot, of course, with teaching archetypes and the prostitute and the saboteur, and I use lots of examples. And I refer to those all the time because they rule this column, and you need to deal with issues that relate to those archetypes. They're essential to the survival and to the evolution of your life. The prostitute is a very fascinating archetype for a number of reasons, not the least of which is nobody really understands the prostitute until you go the full dimension, which is into the sacred prostitute. One of the illusions, Mary Magdalene was the sacred prostitute. I mean, it's an incredible study. But one of the central illusions about the prostitute is that it's a non-married woman's means of employment. However, the majority of women that I have met who qualify for the prostitute archetype are women who remain married because if they were single, they couldn't have the amount of stuff they had as a married woman. Mm-hmm. Now then, one woman actually said to me, I'm not that attractive anymore. I want to keep my house, so I have to stay with him. Now, that is a psyche who is completely leaded in this world. And if you ask that spirit a choice about its life, understand something. If you have that kind of lead, etc., how much inspiration are you free to receive about your full potential? Listen to what I'm asking you again. If you have 1,000 different ways to fulfill your contract, because your potential can manifest that many ways, but you've incarnated your spirit into this lead relationship and you are not willing to go through meltdown, then your inspirations and directions for your life are only going to be tiny because you simply will not allow the incarnation process to happen. When that happens, however, you are simultaneously praying for inspiration and for spiritual evolution. This kind of person is the sort of sets up, this kind of spiritual interior sets up for the experience of what I describe mysticism and schizophrenia, the spiritual madness, where you pray for a level of gold, but you won't let it melt down your lead, and it implodes inside of the self. Right? It's nasty business. I want to add here that your first chakra is also the part of your body in which you are attached to tribal beliefs, ethnic, religion, all of these. And that, I'll bet you have never sat down and said, how much of my creative spiritual self does my tribe control and I am not even aware of? I use the word non-local. For every one of those that you can think of, you better think that that's a part of yourself that is non-local, that is being distributed by your tribe. Let me even push this further. Here's a tribal belief that your spirit might be invested into, because the investments, we talked about lead attitudes, okay? Here's a common lead attitude, and that's that illness runs in the family. I can tell by the reaction that some of you have heard that, all right? But let me show you something. You are learning about alchemy, how energy, this thought will create your matter. Now look at this. We're now going into basic mathematics. You're born, your tribe plugs in your light for you because you can't do it yet. Okay? What adolescence is, and the madness that goes with adolescence, is when we reach an age at which we want to start unplugging our light from the tribe, and the tribe doesn't give up the light easily. So there is a tug of war between a kid's circuit and the parent's circuit because it wants to pull out of the tribe. So here we have the thought, back to here, that illness runs in the family. So now you're little and you're growing up and you're being taught that. So here you are, and some of your circuits are being invested to, I'm carefully choosing these words, to maintain the life and the power of that thought. Repeat, to maintain the life and the power of that thought. I refer you now to the book of Genesis, in which creation is described as the act of putting breath into matter, energy into matter. Breath was breathed into the dirt, and from it came life into the earth. In this same way, everything you put your breath in becomes earth. Group beliefs are group energetic orbits that maintain the balance of a planet that flows in that orbit. You can actually create wobbles by withdrawing your belief from that planet. Okay? This is a planet. And part of your energy maintains its orbit. Now let's turn it around. What that means is the energy from that planet goes into your personal orbit. So if you believe illness runs in the family, everybody else who believes that is supporting that orbit. This becomes a quality of energy, and that is returned to you like an investment in a business. That's how it works. This is how it works. This is why, if think about this, you are alchemically being influenced by a gazillion people while you're sitting here and you don't even know it. Because if you were to sit down just with your first chakra and begin to think, how much of me is connected to group thought forms and I don't even know it, you would have to go into your religious superstitions, your social beliefs. I'll throw one out. How many of you are controlled by what the society says is attractive, i.e. thin is much better than heavy, and my body, therefore, is not good enough? Any of you? Okay. Now, if it weren't for that, would you like who you were? Or are you so plugged in to society that they determine whether or not you like yourself? If you weren't plugged into that, do you think you would like yourself better? Do you think you could really like yourself just the way you are if you weren't plugged in to that thought, that social thought? Okay, now think about that. It means this little bubble that's created by the social mind has more authority over your soul and your psyche, what you do with and for your life, than you do. So who rules your first chakra, which is the source of the direction of creation for you? That does, not you. Now look, come over here. Now you're in an alchemical situation. You need some alchemy. You need it real fast because you've just discovered that, oh, let me see. Let's say something wonderful comes in your life, some grand and marvelous opportunity. Who's facing a wonderful opportunity? And what's your opportunity? You got a wonderful new job. That's perfect, okay? Now then, I don't know what your attitude is about it. But I'm going to go through a process, and I just want to make sure that you know that I'm not reading you. But if you relate to it, so much the better. And you're on the verge, you've started a new tribal dynamic called a new job. Up here, you will automatically take this new experience and run it through all of your tribal beliefs that have always held authority over you. One of which is, as we were talking earlier, how the tribe determines what's physically attractive and what isn't. You may get to that point, and this is what we do. We do it all the time. I have seen this, oh my God, I've seen so much of this, where we get to the tribe, and this is what happens. You look over and see how this tribe is dressed. And you look over and see what this tribe eats for lunch and where they eat. And then you decide whether or not you look okay to be like that, because you've got to now go through the tribal ritual of letting them take you as lead and incarnate you into their gold. You are now going through an alchemical ritual, whether or not you realize it. So the first thing they'll do is they'll check you out physically and you check them out physically. The next step is you are not yet in the in crowd, which is your middle column. You're still an outsider on the tribe. You're not yet in. The tribe has to put you through what? Rituals of initiation. You have to have a ritual. You're in the first chakra. Without a ritual, you can't get into the passage. It's not possible. You can bang around the doors and you can think you're in, but you're not. And you can go ahead and work and you'll work in the building, but you will not be part of the psyche of the tribe. You'll just be, and you will say things like, I had to quit that job. I just didn't feel like I belonged there. But when you talk that, what you're really saying, if you understood alchemy, is what you're really saying is, they never allowed me into a ritual that welcomed me into their psyche, so I couldn't stay there. And if I wasn't welcomed into their psyche, then I could not benefit by what that psyche created. Therefore, I would never receive any raises financially, and I would never be able to go up Jacob's ladder in that business. And I would never be treated like an executive because I am not part of that psyche. Let's shift gears. The initiatory process in this type of tribe would be, it depends on your rank, But if you were high voltage CEO executive stuff, they would begin to have invitations to external social functions, golfing, stuff like that. And the next thing you know, they would watch and see if you adapted to their social functions, et cetera, et cetera. They would have to put you through this. The next thing you know, they would begin to do a physical assessment on what your partner was like, on the whole etiquette stuff, the whole balance, what your social, what your family, whether or not you accommodated and looked like them, and da-da-da. Do you have one kid, at least one, who's pierced? I mean, this kind of thing. That's the end thing for the, you know, there are certain, have you noticed? Maybe you don't notice things like I do, because perhaps many of you don't travel or teach like I do, but there is even a level of social strategy and snobbery to how you get pierced. Isn't that a hoot? It's even that. It's just so, anyway. So you go through this process, and if you pass initiation at this level, they'll let you on the inside. Speaking of piercing, you know that story, don't you, about the kids with me in the summer? You know, because that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. This was, I don't know, 3-4 years ago now. It was summer. It was so hot. It's 10:30 at night. I pull into a White Hen. I go in there for an iced tea. I'm standing there, and I want to pay for the ice. I look over here, and there's a 14-year-old girl, maybe a 12. I don't know what she was. She's small, about this high. And she had her nose pierced here. So I looked at her, and I said, "Why did you do that?" And I watched her body language, and she got like this, and she looked up at me, and she says, "I don't know." "How do you mean you don't know? How can you do something and not know? What do you not say? What? What? Is there anything between your ears? What do you mean you don't know?" So I said, "I asked you a question, and I want an answer." So, do you know, I tell you, my teacher, that archetype in me is so strong, it pays no attention to anything. And so she says, "I like it." And I said, "Do you have parents? Do they know you did this?" And so, So then she points to the guy who's sweeping the floor. And I look at him, and he had this pierced, and he had this. Was it something in his tongue? Was it a tongue that was, ooh? And I said, "Come here." I said, "Why did you do this?" And he said, you know, pulled the old, you know, "I like it," that kind of thing. What kind of answer is that to do that to your body? So I went outside, and now there's a group of them, and they're about 15, 14 years old. They can't drive. That's why they're hanging out in parking lots. And there is probably 7, but I read alchemy. So I'm up here, and I'm looking at them. I don't mean this up and down. We don't have a vocabulary that accommodates this. But I'm in a totally different world. I'm looking at them as from an alchemist's point of view. This is what I want you to learn. So yes, here there were 7 kids, but not here for me. I'm looking at 7 power systems. For me, I'm looking at a circle that potentially was Glastonbury, the Stonehenge. So I asked them this question. I walked into the center of, I walked into their psyche. I'm now standing in front of them. I'm in front. And I looked and I said, I really want to understand why you kids do this. I said, "Would you take me in and help me think like you and tell me why you do this? I want to understand it." So then I watched for eye contact. Which one did they look at? Because whoever they looked at was the leader. And so their eyes glance, and it goes to this young guy who's emaciated and thin. I mean, where do these thin people come from? Do you know, like, my astral body is heavier. You know, so anyway, and he had long hair and this kind of thing. And he was standing there. He was the one that the posture was like this. The other ones were like this. So I looked at him, and I said, "Would you mind if I..." So now, initiation. He has to test me to see if I would respect the group. Now remember, he's 14 years old. I'm an adult. Remember that he's got a group that he has to look tough around. Got it? So he said, the reason I did this is for the yellow duck in my bathroom. Well, now wait a minute. If you laughed at him, you would have insulted. This is an act of initiation. If you can't see that from an alchemical point of view, down here you would look at this and you would say, eh, for God's sake, and you'd walk around and you would dismiss them. But up here, if you know what was taking place, you sit back and you say, that makes sense to me. I understand that. I said, yeah. I said, I have a yellow duck. You want to know something? I did. It was soap, though. And I said, yeah, I have a yellow duck. Yeah. So that's when he looked at everyone else. He nodded his head, and they came in a circle. And now I was in the center of their circle, which meant the tribe had let me in, because I look at it this way. So now I looked at them all. Now, if you get into a circle of a tribe, I'm going to tell you just for mechanics' sake, don't stay on one. Keep turning. No, I'm just telling you what tribal etiquette is, so that you maintain the balance of the tribe. You just keep turning around over your shoulder, getting eye contact with each one, because you want to stay in the center. So this one kid said, we like it, and it's cool, and that kind of thing. And of course, the leader had the most stuff. And I said, you know, you're not the first ones to do this. I said, this goes back for centuries and centuries. Piercing is a very spiritual process, and it has been done. So, but what I was looking at was scarring out of anger versus knowing anything about the spiritual alchemical process of piercing. There's piercing and there's scarring. So I told him this comes from spiritual traditions. And he says, watch the language. I use the word spiritual. That's high altitude. He comes back with a first column vocabulary. And he says, we don't believe in religion. I said, I didn't say religion. I said spirituality. And he said, well, we don't know any of that either. And he said, I said, if you knew about spirituality, you would know about this. And he says, well, teach us. Now, you have to understand what just happened there. He said, come in here, bring this, start the transformation process. I was so touched by that. I just kind of stood. I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that. And I said to him, I would be glad to begin the process of teaching you, but I need to meet your parents, because I won't even begin to introduce this into you without having any contact with your parents. I said, it's not going to happen. I didn't see these kids again, but there isn't a time I don't go by that place and I'm not looking over my shoulder to see if any of them has, if I could spot any of them. It's been a few years and we wouldn't, they won't maybe remember me, but my God, for the rest of my life, I'll remember them. But what I'm talking to you about is being able to read tribal relationships where you are and where the groups are that have command over your thoughts. Now, second, let's move up here. Your second chakra is brutally important, because this is your center of creativity. Therefore, it is your center of abortion. When I say abortion, I am referring to energetic abortions, psychic abortions, emotional abortions, anything in which you end a process that is being born into your life. There are energetic miscarriages and there are energetic abortions. And there are self-induced abortions. I had a friend who's passed away, and I know I would describe her reason for death from an alchemical point of view is that she had too many self-induced abortions and therefore couldn't function anymore. She took all of her creative ideas from the eighth chakra and walked them through all of this, and she thrived when they were in her inner laboratory. And she talked about, you know, how her life would be when she finally would get to the Peace Corps, this, that, and the other, that kind of thing. But when it came here, third chakra, which is the self, she literally, this would be where you packed your bags, where you prepared to change your world, this sort of thing. But when it got to her first chakra, which is really to grab the suitcase, get ready to go, finish it, get your money in place, get all of this, that's when she would engage the abortion. And she would find a reason why she couldn't go on with the next step below your waist of her life. And again, and what she would do is this. From her second chakra, she needed a reason why she couldn't proceed with her life. When you're in the second chakra, just so you know, so you learn to speak your alchemy perfectly, and you know from which place you are now speaking. When you're in the second chakra, and you are about to engage in aborting your project or the next stage of your life or aborting anything that scares you, you need to look below you for a reason and not above. You'll always find the reasons below the chakra that you're standing in and not above it. So in the second chakra, which is money and it's security and all that, you look below, and what's below you is the physical ground. And now what you're actually saying is this idea strong enough to maintain my physical life on here? Will it make me money? Will it keep me safe? Da 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 da. And if you kill it at that point, it will be for a reason below your waist instead of above. Make sense? Good. Your second chakra is also, speaking of lead, where you are connected to other people in control battles. Lead weight to lead weight. Any of you control issues? Okay. Do any of you have control issues with memories? Isn't that an interesting question? Let me rephrase it. Do any of you have control issues over who was right and what really happened? Okay. Let me tell you that is one of the biggest lead manufacturers, because you don't even think of it as a negative thing. All you think of it as a memory, but I have to tell you that it's a mantra, and that's where the lead damage comes in. Because you hold on to your perception as though it were the only perception, and it becomes a matter of lead. If I said to you, how many of those types of perceptions do you energetically maintain? Do you know? Have you any idea? Yes, no? No, you don't. Think about this now. Every one of those is living in some of the cells that you have and is actively converting your gold cell into lead, just packing it in and packing it in. It's a lovely thought. And a lovely visualization as you begin to think about creation and moving creative projects through your life and into the ground. You've got to think about the manner in which you are involved in these attitudes about having to be right. Because if you have to be right, what you'll do is you will enter into a tribe. And you'll have this attitude, it's just my way or no way. It's always my story that tells the truth. You will walk into a place, and unconsciously, you will do this. You will take your energy, and you'll start weaving it like a fence around the room. And the next thing you do, you'll start putting up, it's like an electrical fence. And as that goes up, you will automatically start scanning the room for who's an ally, who's an aggressor. And you'll automatically start engaging in this type of dynamic, because what you're setting up is a force field of perception that's trying to lower your eyeballs into the center of the room. Now, that sounds like a ridiculous way to put it, but I'm telling you, what you're trying to do is impose your psyche over the group that says my way or no way, and I want part of your psyches to give me a part of yours so you'll support that position. All right? And I'll bet you, all of you, if you sat back and thought in your life, you can resonate to people who have done that to you. Or when you can feel their psyche coming into your energy. In control issues one-on-one, you know that you are involved in control issues all the time in your life, always. Where the issue comes in and the lead becomes real heavy is when I would say to you, do you know that you're in a control issue because you're angry at that person and you just won't let that person one-up you? Are any of you got any of those going? You got a one-up controlling? All right, so now I'm going to say, do you understand that that causes malignancy in the ovarian area? Would that change your mind? Or would it? You want to know something? No, it wouldn't. Watch this. I could tell you, I could take that and tell you about what it does in cancer-wise. I could tell you about your health. I could tell you what it does to your ovarian areas. I'm not doing a reading on you. But when you come into this middle sphere and you look at the control issue, just to show you how heavy that is, your ability to choose fifth chakra to release control is so challenging because giving up control is the single most difficult act in the human experience. So no matter how much you may know about what's going on, the actual act of doing it, which is the transformational act in alchemy, is the hardest thing you will ever do in your life. The hardest thing. To give up control is the hardest thing in your life.